Welcome to The Kitchen Table, a conversation about faith, music, and culture. Join Shine.fm's ministry director, Brian McIntyre Utter, and his 18-year-old son, Jake, around the table for this week's chat.
All right, welcome back. Thank you so much for tuning in to The Kitchen Table. We say welcome back because it's just like we continue the conversation from week to week. This is episode 5. Thank you so much for tuning in each and every week, telling your friends about it and getting them to listen and joining the conversation as well. You can follow us on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and then join us on the Kitchen Table group.
Facebook group.
It's a Facebook group, which is underneath the Shine.fm Chicago Facebook page.
Yep.
Just look for that. So our faith question this week.
It's kind of a little tag along off of our faith question from 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And that was, why do Christians argue? So I'm kind of going and diving into a specific track of that.
Okay.
And why do Christians and churches argue about what worship music is played? This kind of tags with our little Music Matters segment because music, but just...
Yeah, but we'll discuss this faith question.
Mm-hmm. The faith question is, why do Christians and churches argue about what music should be played in services?
Okay, we're still arguing about worship.
Mm-hmm.
And when we say worship, more specifically, it's the style of worship or it's the look of a sanctuary or whatever. It's a sad thing, unfortunately, because there is no right or wrong answer to this. But I want to point out this, the history of music within church. For example, there's always been conflict, been conflict. In the year 200, in the 200s, they were arguing about instruments in the church. Now, Scripture specifically talks about the clashing of the cymbal the flute and the different instruments that they want you to utilize as a part of worship. But in the 200s, they were arguing about specific instruments because instruments were associated with secular things. For example, the lyre. That was actually associated with prostitution. So that couldn't be in the church, you know. And so they were arguing then. Well, then in the 300s, a guy named Ambrose of Milan, starting what we know as hymns today in the Western church, he was the one who introduced the concept of community hymn singing in the church.
Well, yeah, because in the olden days, wasn't it just like the choir sang and they sang?
Well, this is like even before the olden days.
This is a long time ago.
Right. And so they would sing in the 300s in the style of like a march. And these marches were written by what they considered heretics in the church. These unbelievers were writing the music and then they were taking those. So it's sort of along that way. And that repeats itself in history.
But like, I think the music back then, it was just to listen to. It wasn't like everyone sang because not everyone could read the music, right?
Right. And they were trying to incorporate that more and more.
You're listening to The Kitchen Table. It's a father-son podcast talking about faith, music, and culture.
In the 600s, you had, of course, monasteries that were popping up. You had chants in the 800s. That's as you're getting into, you know, the Dark Ages and what happened there. In the 900s is when they started enabling choirs to start singing music, believe it or not. In the 1100s, again, hymns are developing over the centuries at this point. They would use rhyme and accent into hymnology during the 1100s. The 1300s, they actually paid professional choir members. So they didn't have congregational singing per se. It was the professionals in the choir that did the singing.
Were they worship pastors? Like, what do you mean by
that? No, they hired people to be in a choir, and the choir did the singing. The congregation sat there and observed. They didn't participate in the singing as well.
I feel like I'd be so bored in church then.
You would think so. 1400s, then, music becomes more complex. There was criticism that only the choir was allowed to sing at that time. So then that starts to unfold. The 1500s, Martin Luther was the guy who really put a stress on congregational singing. He used hymns and music that were already familiar to the majority of the people in Germany. So he incorporated a lot of those old bar tunes. I'll mention one of those here in a little bit, of one you might know from Martin Luther. In the 1600s, they introduced the organ in churches, organ music. And again, organ music was associated with the secular world. They didn't want anything to do with it. And they wouldn't want to sing with the organ, so they'd play the organ, and then they would sing a verse, so the organ would do a verse, and then they would sing a verse, and so it wasn't together. In 1700s, Isaac Watts, big boost on congregational singing through hymns, but the hymns, they because they were putting, you know, starting to do hymn book type things, and the hymns they said, you know, should not have as much of a relevance as the Bible, because that's like the only book that should be there,
yeah,
you know, so to speak. And then, of course, Charles Wesley, brother of John Wesley, was incorporating new hymns, and they were using the songs from that period. The songs that were being sung in bars, they took the music, they rewrote the words. William Booth, founder of Salvation Army in the 1800s, popularizing the phrase, which we heard for the first time, why should the devil have all the good music? Which that'll come up again later. In the 1900s, it was gospel music and quartets that were being a part of that. And when they started, of course, radio and its infancy of incorporating that, the 1970s is when what we now call the contemporary Christian music movement started. A guy named Larry Norman, who I will bring back, Larry, during our Music Matters segment coming up a little bit later today. Again, he was the one. In fact, he even had a song called Why Should the Devil Have All the Good Music? And his whole thing was, I want people to know that he saved my soul, but I still like to listen to the radio. They say that rock and roll is wrong. I know that what's right. I know what's wrong. I don't confuse it. And then he said, why should the devil have all the good music? And that was a lyric from that song. So he founded what is known as the contemporary Christian music movement that we have today. Interesting. He died at age 60, kind of young, but he is my father's age.
Really?
That's how new this all is. But I just wanted to point out the history just to show you that there's always been tension as music has evolved within churchdom, within worship. And it continues today. I don't understand why it does that. They have these worship wars. To me, it comes down to culture, stylistic culture. People like different styles of music.
I mean, we can even see that here because the different generations between us and you bring your old and I bring mine, and it's not the same music.
Well, whatever generation you're coming from listening right now, think about what is your favorite decade of music. And I guarantee you, more than likely, you're going to go back to your adolescence.
I was like, mine's 2000.
Yeah. You go to your teenage years because music is such a huge part of your life as you are developing into an adult. And so I go back to the 1980s. Love that stuff. My dad, he goes back to the 1960s, the Beach Boys and the Beatles and those kinds of people. I mean, my mother saw The Who in concert way back when, which I think is kind of cool.
Wait, Grandma saw The Who?
Grandma saw The Who in concert. There you go. We all like different styles of music.
You're listening to The Kitchen Table. It's a father-son podcast talking about faith, music, and culture.
Here's what we need to realize, that God is a God of all people, all languages, and all styles. When we come together, we each bring our own flavor of worship into this, and each of us sees beauty, the beauty of God, in a unique and personal way. For many, some think that a new song is a departure from the old faith, and they don't want to mess with that. They see the church as a place of quiet reflection and not joyous celebration. So again, when you start incorporating more contemporary worship, others on the other spectrum of it, like the contemporary, not the older stuff, they think anything new has got to be better, so let's do the new. But it's not just generational and styles. I mean, there are contemporary African-American styles of worship today. There are contemporary Australian styles of worship today. Hillsong Church is Australian. They've had a huge influence on the music today. It's only styles. That's what it comes down to. Why do we have these wars? How do we overcome these wars? How do we put our own personal opinions aside for the betterment of expanding the kingdom of God? Comes down to Philippians 2:3. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourself. I have a friend who pastors a church, and they completely redid their worship space.
Really?
And they changed worship up. And they did it with one purpose in mind. They created it not thinking of them as a congregation, but of people out there coming into their space.
I think that does play a big role. I think the space that you also worship in.
To me, it comes down to culture.
Yeah.
You know, we go to a church that has two services that are very distinct cultures. One is more the traditional, the hymnology. They've got a pipe organ and
they do the hymns.
They and the choir's there. And that congregation loves worshiping that way. It's not wrong at all. That is a part of their culture. Our service is the contemporary service.
Which
we don't use the pipe organ.
I mean, we use the drum set, the bass guitar, electric guitar.
Rhythmic.
Like, we use the praise band.
It's a band, all right? The choir loft is empty. We share the space, and that's a little bit different as well. We're trying to redo the space and transition the space. I would say, and I'll go out on a limb here, that those two cultures, which are one church, two different services, we are at the point now where I think we need to add a third culture opportunity in there.
You told me about this, yeah.
Because I believe like the contemporary service, if you will, is really towards my generation. Mm-hmm. Your generation, you'll like it and you'll participate in it, but I think we should give you guys the freedom to create a third culture in there. Why? Some people will disagree with me on this one, and I've had people argue with me on this one.
You're listening to The Kitchen Table, a father-son podcast talking about faith, culture, and music.
My ministry has been in media, specifically in radio, for many years, and I've been in programming.
For many years, you've been doing it my entire life.
Yeah, I have. For programming, you pick a target audience, and you craft content specifically for that target audience. And I've really hesitated at saying this is the way we need to do it in church to reach specific groups. But I believe we're at a point, and people have talked about blending and keeping them together. I don't want to change the traditional service to the point where people don't like it.
Well, yeah.
I don't want to change the contemporary service to the point where people don't like it. We just have to accept the fact that we worship differently and that we have different styles and we have different cultures generationally.
And I mean, at our church, we have combined services sometimes.
So we do.
Like this Sunday is going to be a combined service for our pastor's last Sunday because he was retiring. I actually really like the combined services because it's kind of like two big families coming together.
It is.
And so I'm in the praise band. I play the drums. With playing the drums for the combined service, you're getting the aspect of the, I don't want to say old-fashioned, but...
Traditional.
Traditional. Yeah, traditional. Thank you. Traditional service. And then you have the contemporary service. And so... As the praise band, we kind of blend those two styles together. And I think it's really interesting. For me, I see some lyrics in the contemporary music where it was kind of inspired. Like we've done mashup songs of a contemporary piece with like instead of the bridge, you have the hymn or just the traditional music. And it's probably one of my most favorite things to play.
So it comes down to questions you have to ask yourself. Is this change of worship or a lack of change, if you don't want to change, is it necessary for the gospel to go forth? Are the people in your area who are unchurched, who may not connect with old songs you grew up with, is change necessary? Or are there people who will be distracted by all the lights, all the drums, and that will that keep them from getting connected with the message and creating a stumbling block? These are questions you have to ask yourself. Bottom line question, does the music glorify God? Now, again, they're going to argue that. Some people will say, well, drums can't glorify God.
I feel personally attacked if someone says that. With me, drums is a very hard thing in our church because we don't have the sound equipment to back it up. Like, so we have a little wooden thing that echoes the drums, basically. And so it's really hard to play. And I'm kind of, I call myself an emotional drummer. So if I ever get into the song, I play louder. And it's kind of habit for most drummers. With getting into, I'm praising God through my talents that he's given me, which is playing the drums. I feel attacked when people say that the drums are not glorifying to
God. And that's
God.
Because there's an emotional connection there. There is a genuine emotional tie to a certain song for many that they remember was playing when they accepted Christ. That comes down to you and your personal feeling, your personal history. We miss out on a key point that Jesus makes in the Gospel of John. Our worldview is often limited to our own experiences. And there's nothing wrong with that, but we forget that the world around us finds their experiences just as valid. Do we need to change certain things? No, because stylistically, create something new.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it works for us. And again, people are going to differ and argue with me about this, and that's cool. I get it. You have people that'll argue that it's all about the hymns, that there's a lot of great theology in there. Martin Luther, A Mighty Fortress Is Our God, was actually a bar tune. It was from a saloon, believe it or not. But that is one of the most loved hymns. Some will argue that it's got to be a mix, that it's steep in doctrine.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, with our church, I've been in the praise band for 6 years now. Our worship pastor does a good job. We use hymns, but we revamp them.
Sure.
So we make them fit to the congregation. We've done a bunch of hymns, and we've updated them musically to fit the Christian contemporary service.
Certain generation are more about declaring who God is. That is the mental truth of who God is, where your generation, it's all about the experience and the movement of touching the heart. You value experience many times above good doctrine, which isn't a good thing. That's why we have to be careful. We have to put these two things together. We have to declare the good works of the Lord. Yeah, we do that. But then also leave room for each person to sing their own song.
Mm-hmm.
Why we worship, we have to remember that, why we worship. God has done amazing things for us, gives us a joy that no one can take away. He says that in John 22:16. That's the why of worship. You're listening to The Kitchen Table. We're a father-son podcast on faith, music, and culture. Again, more of the why. And this is to put aside the arguing of the whole thing. I'm looking at the why and why this matters. Colossians 3:16-17 commands us to sing psalms, hymns, spiritual songs. Psalm 150 commands us to praise God with a variety of instruments. Psalm 96:1 commands us to sing a new song. The reason that we looked at that history at the beginning of this podcast was because this is what people have done through the history of the church. They've looked at new ways to sing a new song to try to reach new people. That's the whole purpose of it. Do we want to change what you're doing? Not necessarily. If you just have one service and you want to reach out to your community, you might have to bend a little bit. You have to realize this. 1 hour a week is church, usually.
Mm-hmm.
Are you willing to take that 1 hour and not love everything, but like it so that others can know him? That's the important thing. It's a disagreement many times over the familiar versus the unfamiliar. You don't like new songs. Oh, I don't know this one. I don't have a hymn book to sing this out of anymore. I can't see the musical notes.
I love hearing new songs in church. I don't know if that's a generational thing.
I do too, but I guess I'm unique.
Yeah, you are pretty weird.
But there are, I mean, I don't think it's generational because you know your grandmother. She loves new songs too.
Oh yeah, grandma loves, she comes to me and asks for new songs.
You know, most hymns have a certain rhythm, and we identify that rhythm with church, whereas contemporary music has a beat that we usually identify with the secular world. They've done that through history. Martin Luther with A Mighty Fortress, which was a bar tune. Piano. Do you know when a piano was introduced to the church? It was an instrument in the bars, and they had difficulties getting it in there, believe it or not. People were just unhappy about it. What can we do? What can we do to overcome this worship war? Because you know what? This worship war has been going on, as we see, since the year 200.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's going to happen again. It's going to continue to do it. Here's the main thing. Be flexible. Acknowledge that what reaches you isn't necessarily what's going to reach others. Just as there are different tastes of foods, there are also different tastes in music. Don't demand that the entire worship service be for you. Guess what? Worship is not for you. Worship is redirected back to God. That's why we do this. Maybe someone is being reached by the music you don't like. Don't be divisive and spread discontent with others. So go around saying, well, I didn't like that.
I've had someone tell me that I played too loud in church.
Yeah, I'm sure. You know, the Bible says very little about musical styles, but it does say a lot about church unity. So you going around and complaining about it is doing no one any good. Find musical fulfillment in other ways. You don't have to leave your church. If your church is reaching people and you're excited about new people coming to your church and it's because of these possible changes, remember, that's an hour you spend there on a Sunday morning more than not, and take those other hours during the week and listen to the music you like.
Mm.
And finally, participate in worship even if the musical style isn't your favorite.
I think that one's a hard one for teenagers, like going with the traditional. Like, I don't think we are as accepting.
I think it goes both ways.
Well, really. Yeah, both ways. But I mean, for me personally, I know whenever a hymn comes, like whenever we go to grandma's church, it's a very traditional church. I mean, you of all people know that I do not like the music there. But I think I'm going to take it as a challenge for myself to be more open to accepting the traditional music in churches.
Bottom line, be flexible. Know that it's being used to reach people. Try to like it. Don't gripe about it. Sum it up there.
Mm-hmm. Now we're going to move on to our next segment, Music Matters.
Okay, I'm going to start Music Matters this time with a new song from one of my favorite artists. His name is Matt Carney. Got a new song called Face to Face. His album is called Crazy Truth. Really, the song is about standing face to face before God, but it's really about the grace of God coming over us. The chorus says, I feel your thunder pouring like rain down on the mountains of all my mistakes, rolling like rivers, running with grace into the ocean of your embrace, your hand on my side, leading the way. 10,000 horses couldn't pull me away. Love that song. Give it a listen.
Hand on my side.
I liked it a lot. All right, so my song for this week is Hillsong Young and Free, Love Goes On. Hillsong Young and Free is the youth worship kind of band.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of techno-y. It's kind of...
Is the techno... Again, we're going back to styles. Is the techno style... Do you like that in worship?
I think it's a cool different aspect to have.
So you like variety in worship?
Yeah, I do.
I think your generation likes variety because you are the playlist generation. You can choose many different styles all at once.
Very. So here's a little snippet of Love Goes On by Hillsong Young and Free.
I actually like a little bit of techno in the worship. I don't know about you.
It's pretty nice. I like it.
Yeah, I like Hillsong Young and Free. Okay, so now we're going to go back in
time. Oldie but goldie.
And I didn't go all the way back because I could have went back to like the early 70s with Larry Norman, the father of contemporary Christian music today. Larry passed away at the age of 60, I think in like about 10 years ago now. Probably more than that, actually. He was born the same year as Grandpa. Larry, I picked this song because I remember this song when I first started working in radio and we played these vinyl records. You don't.
I do know what a vinyl record is.
I know you do.
They're
popular.
I'm cultured.
This is a live album that they recorded, released in 1985, called Stop This Flight. And I love this song. I played this song when I do a radio shift back in 87. I would play the song every radio shift because
really?
I got to pick my own music at that time.
You don't have a little computer choosing your songs for you?
Computer in 1987? Yeah. Turntables, buddy. Song's called Messiah. A lot of the language is apocalyptic revelation, but I just love this song. And he was such a huge influence on the Jesus music culture at the time and the hippie culture and people coming to Christ from the hippie culture. So here's Larry Norman, 1985, live version of Messiah.
I could hear the angels calling Messiah.
Interesting. I liked it. It was kind of...
Stylistically a little different.
Yeah, it is. We've
been talking about style today,
style.
Haven't we?
Yep.
That closes up Music Matters. Culture Shock. So Culture Shock, I wanted to talk about someone who's being talked about a lot right now, who I think is finally getting the recognition he deserves even after his passing, because he had such an influence on the culture in the United States. Fred Rogers.
Isn't that the guy who does Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood?
Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Fred Rogers, you might not have known this, was a Presbyterian minister.
Really?
Yeah. And he developed Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood as a part of his thesis. I don't know if it was like master's level or doctoral work, but that was part of his thesis project. And for more than 30 years, he taught children through this television program on public television. Finally, he's getting the true recognition of his impact on people. There's a new documentary out called Won't You Be My Neighbor on his life. I have not seen it yet, only because it hasn't come to a theater near us. It's in AMC theaters only. Is it here?
Yeah, it's in the mall.
Oh, I got to go check it out. I'm not up on those kinds of things. There's lots of viral videos that are going around on the internet
right now. I've seen a lot of things about it.
How his show was so simple, how he talked with such a soft, soothing voice, and how so engaging it was to children at that time. And I think, how far removed are we? And maybe I'm showing my generational age here, but it seems like kids today, I'm going to sound like a grumpy old man here, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
It seems like kids today are... constantly have to be stimulated with all the devices in their hands. And he took it down to the simplest form and was able to communicate things to people in such a quiet way. He used a little puppet, a little tiger puppet. This little tiger puppet represented his own inner child. He would sing, "Sometimes I wonder if I make a mistake," meaning I am so different that I am a mistake. He used the deep and simple, far more essential than the shallow and complex. And that's why he had such a huge impact on children of that generation. I don't know what else to say about him other than he was a great guy. I mean, when Robert Kennedy was assassinated, he dealt with that on his show and how you talk about that to kids. When we were going through some racial stuff in the U.S. and how African-American kids were kicked out of the public pools, he actually brought in an African-American character into the neighborhood, and literally they had a little wading pool, and he's got his shoes off, cooling down, and he invites this guy to, you know, take his shoes off and get into the wading pool with him.
That's awesome.
So he dealt with those kinds of things that our nation was dealing with at the time. Again, the documentary is called Won't You Be My Neighbor, about Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Love, love, love that guy and what he stood for and the impact.
I feel like we need another Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
You think so?
In today's society. You know what I mean? Because it's like, with what you said, like with everything being so shallow and complex, I think we need a change and have deep but simple. I think we need that in today's society. So if anybody wants to become the new Mr. Rogers, I mean, you probably can't become the new Mr. Rogers because he's such a great guy, but something wants to do something like that, I will support you 1,000%.
All right. That's Culture Shock for this week.
And wrapping up the episode 5 of The Kitchen Table.
Thanks for listening. We've been talking about the worship wars, specifically stylistic and worship music, and how we just need to be flexible and realize that new music reaches new people. And that's the way Paul talked about in his missionary journeys, that he had to adapt and change to reach new people all the time. To the wise, he spoke bigger words, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't want to say more intelligent, but to the simple, he simplified the message. And that's music's the same way and how we worship. And remember, worship isn't about us. It's about reflecting our love back to God through worship.
Yeah.
We also had great Music Matter segment talking about music, going back to the original guy of contemporary Christian music movement, Larry Norman. Mm-hmm.
And then talking about Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, the new documentary, Won't You Be My Neighbor?
Go see it.
Go see it, yeah.
Yeah.
I want to go see it. I'll go
too.
With you.
Let's go see it.
All right. Have a great week.
Thanks for listening in. Again, if you want to connect with us, you can connect with us on Facebook. We have a Facebook group on the Shine.fm Chicago Facebook page. We can start conversations. Called The Kitchen Table, the Facebook group. We also have Twitter that you can follow us on. My account is my name, Brian Utter, U-T-T-E-R.
And I am Utter_Butter, U-T-T-E-R. See what I did there?
Yeah.
Repeat.
You have to spell it. Something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So connect with us if you can. Let us know your questions. In fact, our question today about the whole worship thing,
it wasn't one of ours. It was one of your friends.
One of my friends, Wayne, tossed that one out to us. He tossed it out in a different way, and I sort of adapted a little bit, so we went with it. So
thanks, Wayne.
Thanks, Wayne. Appreciate it. All right, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Have a great week.
Thanks for listening to The Kitchen Table on the Shine.fm Podcast Network from Olivet Nazarene University. Be sure to subscribe for more content delivered each week on faith, music, and culture.